KALW.
Incarcerating immigrants is a multi-billion dollar business.
Bay Area lawmakers are fighting to abolish private immigration detention centers.
Over 70% of immigrants detained by ICE are actually held in facilities run by private companies.
We'll hear how the agency has responded. Then we hear how activists created a sacred space for Native Americans at San Quentin.
I'm what they call a sidewalk Indian because before I come to prison, I didn't know these ways. I never participated in these ways.
And we'll hear about some of the ways that Native Americans have fought for their rights while incarcerated.
We all came together and made a decision. I mean, that's easy for you to say that me having short hair, that, you know, it makes me not less than a man, but you're not Native American.
I'm Henat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Last month, California became the first state in the nation to abolish private prisons. Lawmakers included immigration detention centers in their bill. Most of those are run by private companies. But Immigration and Customs Enforcement is fighting back. Bay Area politicians accuse the agency of bending federal law so that it can continue detaining immigrants in California. KALW's immigration reporter Teresa Katsourilis is here to break this down for us. Hi, Teresa.
Hey, Hannah.
So our government detains immigrants who aren't citizens all the time.
Right. So the U.S. typically detains immigrants who aren't citizens when they think they're not authorized to be here.
Mm-hmm. So which government agencies are actually doing this?
So there are two agencies that do this. Customs and Border Patrol detains people close to the border and holds them in processing centers, which are at least supposed to be short term. We're talking 72 hours or so. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, arrests and detains people throughout the U.S. Most people in their custody are either awaiting deportation or a decision in an immigration case. And under Trump, this immigration detention system is expanding. The U.S. now detains about 500,000 immigrants a year.
And where are federal agencies putting all these people?
So this is where it gets interesting, because ICE detains very few of these immigrants itself. Mm-hmm. Over 70% of immigrants detained by ICE are actually held in facilities run by private companies. California is home to four of these privately run immigration detention centers. They detain around 4,000 people, and that includes the Adelanto facility in Southern California, which is actually the second largest immigration detention center in the country.
Okay, so who is running these facilities?
There are corporations that specialize in this. Geo Group and CoreCivic are two of the biggest. Incarcerating immigrants is a multi-billion-dollar business.
So back to the bill. Why did California politicians want to get rid of these facilities?
So critics of private prisons in general argue that their business model actually incentivizes prisoner abuse. When you think about it, you know, if you're a company and want to make as much money as possible, you can do that by cutting costs, mm-hmm. which in this case can mean spending as little as possible on the people you're detaining. Several federal reports have found that private prisons are on the whole more dangerous than public ones. And this criticism extends to private immigration detention facilities, too. Some of these facilities have been accused of rampant abuse. At California's Adelanto facility, for example, an investigation by the state's attorney general's office found that people were sometimes kept in their cells up to 22 hours a day. Mm. Detainees also claim the guards pepper-sprayed hunger strikers who protested these conditions. The Department of Homeland Security released a report in 2018 that detailed serious concerns about the facility.
So lots of allegations. How did California respond?
Well, most recently by abolishing these kinds of private detention facilities in the first place. Mm-hmm. Gavin Newsom signed a bill called AB 32 into law this past October. It was written by the Bay Area's very own Rob Bonta, an assembly member from Alameda. This law bars California's Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation from entering into any new contracts with private prison companies or renewing any old ones. Mm-hmm. So that means no new private prisons or private immigration detention centers starting on January 1st, 2020. Mm-hmm. The law allows existing contracts to continue until 2028. So some private prisons will be sort of slowly phased out. Mm. But that's not what's happening with immigration detention centers, because just by coincidence, All four of California's privately run immigration facilities have contracts that just happen to be up for renewal next year.
Coincidence?
Yeah.
And AB 32 prevents them from getting renewed, which means what? California just won't have these kinds of detention centers anymore?
That's right. That seems to be the idea. Under this new law, ICE will lose four privately run facilities holding about 4,000 people, and they're going to lose them fast.
Okay. So what's going to happen to all those people?
ICE released a statement on AB 32 the same day Governor Newsom signed it into law, and it said the people who will really suffer if these centers are closed are actually Californians. ICE will just transfer immigrants they detain in California to private facilities in other states, which would force friends and family to travel greater distances to visit detainees. I will say that at least some immigration attorneys say that's not necessarily true. They argue that transferring thousands of California's immigrants to other states is logistically difficult and pretty expensive. So in practice, AB 32 might limit the number of Californians the agency could detain.
Okay, so how else has ICE responded?
Well, the agency says it's reviewing the law and suggested it might not stand up in court. ICE also responded to AB 32 by immediately trying to get around it.
How?
Well, as soon as it became clear that ICE was going to lose those four private detention centers, the agency announced that it wanted to commission four new centers in California, and it invited corporations to bid on those contracts. The agency's really hustling to get these contracts signed in the next 2 months before AB 32 goes into effect. It only gave corporations 2 weeks to apply for them, for instance. Corporations get at least twice as much time. Most of the time, we're talking about a government contract bidding process here. And these new detention facilities that ICE wants are pretty interesting.
How?
They want facilities that will be 100% ready to open within the next 4 weeks, which, if you're opening a new prison, is very fast. And they want centers that are located in the same general area as the facilities that are closing.
Very specific, these requirements.
They are. And ICE's critics say the agency's using these very specific parameters to just keep the private detention centers they already have up and running.
And who are some of these critics?
These critics include a lot of prominent Californian politicians. Kamala Harris, Dianne Feinstein, and others say this is an obvious attempt to dodge a California state law. California Assemblymember Bonta, who wrote the law from Alameda, argues that the agency is also clearly favoring private prison corporations they've already worked with this crazy short and specific contract process, and that this could violate federal law. Basically, he's arguing that when federal agencies ask corporations to bid on government contracts, they can't just rig the game so that one corporation always gets the contract.
All right. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Sana.
Teresa Katsourilis is KALW's immigration reporter. You can find more of her stories online at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Our next story comes to us from the Uncuffed team at San Quentin Radio.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden you heard this.
The men incarcerated at San Quentin practice religion in a number of different places. Some people go to the Protestant or Catholic chapels. Others, Muslims, Jews, and Buddhists, worship in the Interfaith Chapel. There are also places for Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, Rastas, and Odin worshipers. For Native Americans, they go into a sweat lodge, but it took a struggle to have one in a prison. From our partners at San Quentin Radio, Tommy Shakur Ross has that story.
Atewa ma yonku yate.
It's completely dark in there. The only light you see is when the door is open, you can see everybody.
This is Gregory White Eagle Coates. He describing what it's like inside of the sweat lodge.
But when that door is closed, from layers of blankets, you don't see any light other than the redness of the rocks. That's when we connect to the unseen world.
The people inside pour water on fire-heated rocks. The rocks represent the ancestors. Then the lodge heats up and the men start to sweat. That sweating is an act of deep purification.
You connect with a time, a place, a way that was, you know, beyond measure. You relax. You're able to pray and think about people that are no longer here.
Once the participants are purified, the firekeeper, who stands outside the sweat lodge, opens the door and hands in their sacred pipe.
When we use that pipe, it's a connection above to Creator. And the smoke that comes out of it, there's no self-gratification in it. When you blow that smoke out of that pipe, you're saying prayers. You're offering your prayers to the Creator.
The sweat lodge is located on the edge of the prison yard, right behind the baseball field and next to the laundry room. It's about the size of two basketball courts side by side. It's fenced off. There's fruit trees, flowers, and herbs. It's like an oasis in the corner of a prison. And it really is an oasis for the Native Americans here because it's set aside for their use. And it's the only place in prison where people are allowed to use tobacco and have a fire.
This was the first sweat lodge in the world in an institution in a prison.
That's Hector Frank Heredia. He works for the prison as a Native American spiritual advisor. He's Yaqui Apache Navajo Ohlone. In the 70s, Native Americans were organizing across the country for their right to practice their religion, including here at San Quentin.
First Native American inmates, they started as a club, and they were working out of their cells, out of their housing, and eventually they got together and wanted to have a sweat lodge. And we had a lot of Native American spiritual leaders in the outside come in here and start talking to them, and then that started that in motion.
At the same time, activists occupied Alcatraz and built a sweat lodge at the former prison just a few miles away from San Quentin. They eventually marched all the way to Washington, D.C. In 78, President Carter signed the Religious Freedom Act. It said Native Americans had the right to practice their religion just like anybody. Here at San Quentin, Native American prisoners petitioned the warden to set aside a space for them to use. When the occupation at Alcatraz got shut down, activists had to move the sweat lodge.
And so they brought the fireplace here.
The sweat lodge is a Lakota tradition. Hector says the Lakota elders wanted men inside the prison to be able to do this sacred practice. So they moved the sacred coals and wood from Alcatraz to San Quentin.
For these brothers, these Native American brothers to get well, to learn their culture, to learn their languages, to learn the ways. There's a lot of different ways, but it was a universal way of bringing our people together into this hoop, mending the hoop, as they said.
White Eagle got to San Quentin the same year the sweat lodge was built. He tells me that elders appointed a man named Archie Fire Lame Deer to come inside to help build the lodge.
He brought us all together, and there was probably over 70 brothers. Brought us all in the circle and explained what we were going to do. He asked the brothers that had built lodges before to be there to help the other brothers who didn't know what's going on.
But first,
he went in there and saged the whole thing down with sage and his eagle wing. He had a huge eagle wing.
The lodge was put together in four sections.
The west and the east direction were tied. Four poles, four willow. And then they brought the north and south direction together. 16 all the way around. Each one has a prayer.
The willow sticks form the skeleton of the hut, which is then covered with blankets. After the sweat lodge was complete, White Eagle took part in his very first sweat lodge ceremony.
We went around the fire, asked Archie permission. They entered the lodge. As we're going in, our brother's saging us off again with an eagle feather and a sage. We get down on all fours. That's to show that we are humbling ourselves, that we're no better than anything else the Creator has created.
Before White Eagle came to prison, he says he had no connection to his native heritage.
I'm what they call a sidewalk Indian, because before I come to prison, I didn't know these ways. I never participated in these ways. So for me to share these things, sometimes it's hard because I'm nobody. These guys were from reservations. I was from the city.
Now White Eagle goes into the sweat lodge almost every week. He's not paroling anytime soon, but he's finding his way home through spiritual practice. Hector says that's true for a lot of Native Americans at San Quentin. Many of them didn't grow up with their tribe's traditions, but here in prison, they are at least able to learn this one.
And the elders used to tell us, this may not be your way, but come this way, this red road way, and you'll find your way. You'll find your people. You'll find your songs. You'll find your language. You'll find your medicine. You'll find your fireplace. You'll find yourself.
Inside San Quentin, I'm Thomas Shakur Ross with San Quentin Radio. I'm out.
Ate maya yanko hoyate. Ate maya yanko hoyate. Jani jelo hoyate. Hoyate jani jin hoyahuelo. Eya heyo. Ate wa maya yanko.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We're staying in San Quentin for our next story to meet one of the estimated 100 people in the prison who identify as Native American. His name is Eldridge Lee Yazzie. He's Navajo and has been incarcerated for 27 years. Native Americans like Yazzie have the right to practice their spirituality in prison, but sometimes the prison rules conflict with their spiritual practices. Thomas Shakur Ross tells us the story of how Yazzie stood firm and refused to give up one of these rituals.
Like many Navajo people, Yazzie wears his hair long.
I wear it in a braided up ponytail. And when I dance, I traditionally wear it in two braids.
Yazzie has worn his hair this way his whole life. He was born on a reservation in New Mexico. When he was 3, his family moved to L.A. There, he was one of the few Native American kids in his school.
Kids didn't really know the culture that I was from, so, you know, we were always ridiculed about, you know, having our hair long, you know, calling us a girl.
Yazzie grew up learning about his Native American heritage.
Without my relatives and my ancestors passing down the traditions and ceremonies, you know, we'd be lost.
But then, as Yazzie got older, he got involved with the gang.
I took up the street life and kind of went away from my culture.
That street life ended him up in prison with a 15-to-life sentence in 1992. Even in prison, he wore his hair long. It wasn't a big deal. But then a few years later, a prisoner down in San Diego cut his hair and used that new look as a disguise to escape. So the California Department of Corrections, CDC, made a new rule. Prisoners could no longer grow their hair more than 3 inches long. And beards, you had to shave that completely off.
To punish the whole population because of one person, you know, I felt that was wrong, especially when it didn't have nothing to do with us. I thought it was absurd because they didn't even have the consideration of, you know, our beliefs.
Be that as it may, the rule meant Yazzie would have to cut his hair, but that defied his cultural and spiritual practices. So he and other Native Americans in prison felt like they had to take a stand.
We all came together and made a decision. I mean, that's easy for you to say that me having short hair that, you know, it makes me not less than a man, but, you know, that's, you're not Native American. Put it like this, you'd feel naked. I would feel naked myself.
Yazzie says his aunts and uncles went through a similar situation when they grew up.
The government used to haul them away to government schools and forcibly make them cut their hair.
Hair is considered an extension of a person's spirit.
When we go to our heaven, we go with our hair on. Our hair are just roots of our nerves. We just keep it growing.
That's Hector Heredia. He works at the prison as the Native American spiritual advisor. He says many Native Americans only cut their hair when it's for a spiritual reason.
If there's a death in our family, some tribes will cut it off, or you get in trouble or something, they'll cut your hair off. It's another symbol of our identities as who we are, as men, as women. You know, we've always had long hair, and that's just our culture.
That's why when the prison told Yazzie to cut his hair, he flat out refused. So did other Native Americans and some Rastafarians who refused to cut their long dreadlocks. Some Muslims who wore long beards refused to shave. CDC punished protesters by adding time to their sentences.
And letting us out the hottest part of the day.
Limiting what they could buy at the commissary.
And taking all our appliances away. You know, it was difficult, but that's just giving us more strength and letting them know that, you know, this is who we are, you know, and we're not caring how far you can push us. You know, I'm not trying to be an a-hole or anything, but, you know, I want them to understand what I went through and being proud of my heritage.
Yazzie refused to cut his hair for 8 years. Then in 2006, a court decision found this grooming rule unconstitutional. While Yazzie had been protesting, the prison administration added time to his sentence. So he filed an appeal to remove that extra time, arguing that his rights had been violated when they instituted the grooming standard. The prison granted his appeal. But after all that, Yazzie cut his hair off anyway. It happened when his Aunt Lou was diagnosed with cancer and undergoing chemotherapy.
When she got this disease, it started making me think, she's going through radiation, she ain't got no hair. So I wanted to be a part of what she was going through, even though I'm not there physically, to let her know that, you know, I'm with you on this fight.
Yazzie made the choice to cut his hair in a very public way during a spiritual ceremony. It happened at San Quentin's annual breast cancer awareness walk. Yazzie came on stage. Two members of the Native American community at San Quentin, Robin and Mike, were there to cut his hair.
Robin and Mike came on stage and blessed it, purified it with sage and cedar. And Robin was singing the whole time.
Offer up the spirit calling song.
He cut it off to the ponytail. And then I told Mike, I'll go ahead and shave it all the way off. It was a life change because I can't recall the last time I had ever my hair that short, except for I think maybe when I was a baby.
Yazzie's ponytail was about 3 feet long. He donated to a group that makes wigs for cancer survivors. 6 years after Yazzie's haircutting ceremony, his hair is back to being long, all the way down his back.
Man, I love my hair.
In San Quentin, I'm Tommy Shakur Ross with San Quentin Radio. I'm out.
Your daddy loves you. Yes, he does you. Puts no one above you. 'Cause you're my girl. That's pretty girl, baby. Your daddy loves you. Oh.
Tommy Shakur Ross is a producer in KALW's radio program at San Quentin State Prison. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from San Quentin by going to KALW.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter and get all the stories, interviews, and more right in your inbox every week. Now, before we go, here's some local music. This is Noah and the Architects from San Jose. They're performing at the Art Boutique in their hometown this Wednesday night. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Hold on and I will try.